the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program, that barometer of popular culture, that indicator of elite opinion, that guide to parenting, otherwise known as the New York Times, is out with a very interesting article. The headline ought to capture the attention of every parent, for that matter, every child, and everyone who's ever been one or the other. That means you. Here's the headline. For some parents, shouting is the new spanking. Hillary Stout, writing in the New York Times, says that many in today's generation of parents would never spank their children, but, she writes, incongruously with that, they nonetheless with regularity are a generation that yells, shouting at their children. Very, very interesting. I think it shows what happens when you lose an understanding of discipline that is grounded in punishment and in a very strong model of teaching children right from wrong and teaching them consequences to a parenting mode in which discipline is really reduced to frustration. And that frustration boils over into shouting and yelling. I become totally frustrated and I've been doing things all day for you, says a mom. This is ridiculous. Amy McCready says, I've worked with thousands of parents, and I can tell you without question that screaming is the new spanking. I'd love to know what you think about this. You know, every once in a while you see something like this, and you say, okay, that tells us something we need to know. Now, so many of these things that erupt in popular culture erupt in such a way that they are teachable moments, that they're moments that really demand some quick thinking and response. And I think it comes down to this. I want to test a theory with you, and I want to invite you to discuss it. When you abandon a model of parenting and discipline that is grounded in teaching right from wrong and holding the child accountable with consequences, you then move into a mode of discipline, which is really not discipline at all. It is simply, from time to time, greater or lesser frustration, which means more or less yelling. Let's talk about it. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. One of the most important issues we discuss on this program from time to time is the discipline of children. And there was a time, like with so many other issues, we really didn't have to spend that much time talking about it because parents knew how to discipline their children. They've been disciplined as children. They understood the value of it as they grew up into maturity. They understood their responsibility as parents. They had a model of their understanding of the child as one that would have to be corrected. Not one that was inherently good and that the consequent mode of parenting should be to get out of the way. In times past, parents understood they got to get in the way of their children and make the consequences clear, teaching right from wrong, and, yes, using spanking as a way of making that very clear. Out of love for the child, a discipline that is tied to a very objective and judicial understanding of right and wrong. But now it's frustration. And the New York Times is honest. Hillary Stout, I think, is very insightful in saying that what you're left with this new mode of discipline, is really frustration because it boils over and mom or dad just yells and shouts. For some parents, says the New York Times, shouting is the new spanking. As it said, parents who in this generation say they would never spank do scream. And if this has the attention of the New York Times, yes, the New York Times, it ought to have our attention as well. The phone number again is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're glad to hear from you also by email. Write us at mail@albertmohler.com, at Twitter, Albert Mohler and Mohler Radio, and at Facebook, the Albert Mohler Program. First, to review some other issues in the news. Speaking of barometers of the signs of the times, the supplement to this week's issue, The Chronicle of Higher Education, is about diversity on American college and university campuses. And there is a key article I just had to cut out and bring in to talk to you about. It is entitled Changing Genders, Changing Policies. According to this, again, published in The Chronicle of Higher Education, that's kind of the Wall Street Journal of the university world, it says this, Nearly 300 colleges and universities have policies that recognize the rights of transgender people to be free from discrimination and harassment. Well, that's really interesting. This is one of the hardest, most difficult challenges facing Christians today. Not only Christians individually, but Christians who are employers and employees, Christians who are students and teachers, Christians who are parents, and the leaders of our churches. The transgender revolution is, to a degree, even beyond the homosexual revolution, a real challenge to our basic understandings, not only about sexuality, but about what it means to be human. Now, there are some serious proposals made within this article, and the fact that they're so seriously made is why I'm so serious to discuss them. For instance, here's some advice on handling gender transitions. Listen to this. For the transitioning employee or student, that is usually one step, that is, the announcement to change gender, was already a long process of self-acceptance and understanding. The transitioning employee or student may feel vulnerable and apprehensive about the reactions to such an announcement, while coworkers or fellow students may be confused or even hostile to the anticipated change. Well, that's interestingly enough, the pointer to, in this article, why you have to let people, now get this, you have to let people define who they are at every stage, according to this logic, as they may be male one day or one week and present themselves as female the next and make progress and then step back and consider and reconsider. Some have surgery and some do not. One of the points made in this article is that there is no fixed definition of what any of these things mean. And it's controversial even within the transgender movement on some of these questions. What about restrooms? Now you've got to wonder how this is going to be handled. Let me just read to you from this report. Some administrators, assuming that the transitioning person has no right to make that change until after gender reassignment surgery, may demand to see medical proof of a person's right to change which facility he or she uses. But many transgender individuals shift fully into their adopted genders long before undergoing surgery, or they may decide to forego some or all surgery related to the transition. Here's their suggestion. The first principle should be respecting the right of transitioning people to use the restroom of the gender with which they identify, regardless of surgery status. I just find that fascinating. It's very indicative, I think, very revealing of where we are, and especially of where the higher education community and the secular world thinks the new moral judgment is to be made. One of the proposals, by the way, made in this is that universities might want to shift to single-occupant restrooms. And that's kind of the way this is going, isn't it? When we talk about the transgender revolution subverting gender, I think what we're talking about here is the fact that we're giving up on gender altogether. If you just have one restroom, single occupant, you're basically saying we can't even handle the gender question. We're just going to have human bathrooms, and you reason it out. I can also tell you, as the president of a college and seminary, no institution can afford to do that. Can you imagine trying to have a football stadium where you're dealing with thousands of people who would each have individual bathrooms? Can you imagine that in a college or university? You can't have that in an elementary school, much less a major college or university. But that's the logic. That's where this is headed. And I find that very sad. We need to reach out with care and compassion to those who are really troubled by gender identity. That's an issue that should have the attention of the church, should compel the compassion of the church. And frankly, it's a challenge to us that is not adequately worked out in terms of evangelical Christians in particular, thinking through the theological and biblical dimensions of our response to that question. We've talked about that on this program before. We've offered some guidelines. But let me just say that the bottom line is that we can't accept this kind of nonsense. And the worst part of it is, the core of it is, this assumes that individuals really know who they are on their own. And from a biblical perspective, that's perhaps the most dangerous thing. We do not know who we are alone. We desperately need God, our Creator, to tell us who we are. For that matter, we need God to tell us what's wrong. We're completely dependent upon the revelation of God. We're completely dependent upon God speaking through His Word to tell us, here's who you are. I made you. I named you. I made you male and female. I made you for my glory. Oh, and you're confused? Well, let me tell you why you're confused. It's because all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Well, we're the company that confused. Homo sapiens. We desperately need clarification, and it's going to have to come from the Creator. There's no way that we can just somehow create a think tank or a study committee to rethink gender and come up with what's going to work. When you abandon the Creator's design and purpose, you set yourself up for disaster one way or another. You set yourself up for foolishness as well, such as the proposal that we just go to single person, non-gender assigned bathrooms for massive amounts of people. It's a symptom of what happens when we begin to lose sanity on an issue as simple and straightforward as gender. But then again, human beings, in our sinfulness, aren't simple or straightforward, and that's why we have hard work to do, and that's why the church had better be thinking hard and working seriously towards an understanding of a response to the transgender challenge. There are folks whose lives are being shaped by this issue, and there are folks who are desperately looking and listening for a word. We'll be right back to talk about shouting as the new spanking on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Everyone I know that's seen this article has had a little smile in response to it, because that's the smile of recognition. Anthropologists tell us that human beings have a smile reflex that comes when we look at something with recognition and go, okay, been there, done that, that's familiar. The headline is, for some parents, shouting is the new spanking. The story begins, by the way, it's written by Hillary Stout, reporter for the New York Times. Jackie Klein, she says, is a devoted mother of two little boys in the suburbs of Portland, Oregon. She spends hours ferrying them to soccer and Cub Scouts. She reads child development books. She can emulate one of those pitch-perfect, calm maternal tones to warn, you're making bad choices when, say, someone doesn't want to brush his teeth. That's 90% of the time. Then there's the other 10% when she admits, I have become totally frustrated and lost control of myself. It can happen during the weeks and weeks and weeks of no camp in the summer or the end of a long day at home, just as adult peace is within her grasp, when the 7 or 9-year-old won't go to sleep, and then she yells, this is ridiculous. I've been doing things all day for you. Hillary Stout writes, many in today's pregnancy, flaunting, soccer, cheering, organic snack proffering generation of parents would never spank their children. We congratulate our toddlers for blowing their nose. Good job. We friend our teenagers, literally and virtually. We spend hours teaching our elementary school offspring how to understand their feelings. This is a generation that doesn't spank, but incongruously and with regularity, this is a generation that yells. Amy McCready, founder of Positive Parenting Solutions, a firm which teaches parenting skills, says, I've worked with thousands of parents, and I can tell you without question that screaming is the new spanking. My theory is this. It's not new, but it is. It's newly prompted by this article. When you give up on parenting in a very well-understood mode of discipline, then what you end up with is just parental frustration. You try to parent by venting your anger. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. We have callers on the line, others on the way. Fascinating stuff coming in by Twitter and email. Email us at mail@albertmueller.com, Twitter/Albert Mueller. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Kevin's waiting to talk. He's listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hey, Dr. Mueller. Thanks for taking my call. I was just calling because I wanted to say that I think it's sad because yelling just really teaches the kids as they're growing up that they can yell back and backtalk authority. And that spanking should never be done out of anger by a parent, but always out of correction. If it's done out of anger, then it just becomes harming the child. When it becomes a correction thing, the child learns from it. That's what I think that the biblical mandate for it is, and I just think otherwise it's done wrong.
Hey, Kevin, are you a parent yet?
No, actually, I am married, but when I expect children, that's what we're going to do.
Well, Kevin, God bless you, and good for you for thinking ahead. And I think that's really, really important. The point you make is essential. The real problem here is the anger that that basically produces the parental frustration that boils over into yelling and screaming. Kevin made the point. He said spanking is intended to be correction, not done in anger. That's absolutely right. That's why I prefer to refer to it as a judicial spanking. In other words, it's just like in a court of law, the parent serving as a judge, in this case, kind of judge, jury, and executioner, What happens is that the child is brought in, and it's an objective reality that he or she has disobeyed. Here's what happened. Here's what you did. Here's what the consequence is. I'm not spanking you because I'm angry. I'm not spanking you because I'm ill-tempered. I'm spanking you because there are consequences to what you did, and I'm calm and deliberate, but this is going to happen. And that's very different than anger. And I think it's very interesting that the anger is the first thing that's really cited in this article. Kevin, thanks for your call. Let's go also to Louisville. Eric's on the line. Go ahead, Eric.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Glad to hear from you. What do you think?
I'll try to put it in a nutshell for you. First, if you will allow me, I want to say I appreciate your show. I appreciate your heart. And the more I listen to your show, the more I appreciate your heart, the more I develop appreciation for what you try to communicate. But just to relate my story, I very much I appreciate your intent with what you're communicating here. I very much believe in accountability for children, accountability for me as a parent. But we raised our kids without spanking, and it worked for us, and I would do it again.
Okay, Eric, I appreciate your call. I appreciate those very kind comments. If you'll allow me, I just want to ask you a follow-up question so that we don't misunderstand here, because I think I also catch enough of your heart in that expression to say, when you say you didn't spank your children, you're not saying that you didn't discipline them.
Very much. You're very correct. There very much was accountability for our children. We tried to communicate with them, but they very much... choices, you know, we tried to, from an early part, tried to help them understand that they are making choices. You know, we have certain things we need to do, but in that, they are making choices, and, you know, we want them to make the right choice, and if they're not going to make the right choice, they're going to have to suffer consequences.
I appreciate so much your call, Eric. It's a good reminder that what we're talking about in terms of faithful parenting is what some people have called, it's not original with me, but I appreciate the metaphor, a toolbox of parenting tools. And the reality is that in different situations, parents probably need to use different disciplinary tools. Eric has spoken pretty directly the fact that he and his wife raised their children without spanking. I am a proponent of spanking on biblical terms, but I'll tell you that you know, there are parents who cannot, for one reason or another, spank effectively. Perhaps their anger is too close to boiling over. And they would not be actually blessing their children with love by a judicial spanking, but falling very close to the margins of responding in anger by physical act of correction that's more about the parent than the child. And so there are different issues to discuss here, and I didn't intend to turn this primarily into a show about spanking, but then again, that's kind of hard to avoid when the headline of the article is, for some parents, shouting is the new spanking. I appreciate Eric's call. And that's the reason why I wanted to come back to say that the issue here is primarily discipline rather than frustration. And I firmly believe that what you're left with when you abandon discipline is nothing more than training your children, conditioning your children to try not to press you over a certain limit of frustration, or you're going to yell. Or perhaps the parents can fall into different kinds of misbehavior or pathology in terms of what the child just comes to expect. Interestingly, in a day of moral relativism, there seems to be no one arguing that yelling and screaming is a good thing. In other words, even in this day of secular confusion and confusion among just about all kinds of people, regardless of the circle of influence, over issues of right and wrong and morality, it is interesting to look at this. You have a professor here who is quoted as saying that there is no group of Americans that advocate yelling as a parenting style. And I have to love his kind of understated professorial prescription that comes after that. He says, my bottom line recommendation is don't yell. It's a risk factor for a family. I don't think anyone's going to argue with that. And I think every parent has realized that there are times when we have raised our voice, there are times when we have shouted, and for a frighteningly large percentage of us, there are times when we have yelled. But folks, if our yelling and shouting is indeed sin, and if we are using that rather than disciplining our children, then really it's the parental behavior that's at much in question here is the behavior of the child. And again, it comes back to fundamental questions. What is the job of the parent? What is the nature of the child? And what is discipline supposed to be? What does it have to be in order to lovingly correct the child? The Bible says to save the child's life. We'll be right back with the Albert Mueller Program.
Listening to the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Hello, America. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're discussing the New York Times article, kind of a stunner. Almost everybody that sees this has to pick it up and look at it. The article is entitled, "For Some Parents, Shouting is the New Spanking." Testing a theory with you, this article is documenting the fact that many parents who would never spank, especially in a generation that has been largely intimidated and shall we say, parented into non-spanking, they would never think of raising their hand. Instead, they raise their voice. And evidently, with a lot of rapidity, and a lot of volume, and, well, no shortage of harm, according to this article. And I do find it interesting, as I've said, that even in a day of moral relativism, you have a professor in here cited in the article from the University of Connecticut by saying there is no group of Americans that advocate yelling as a parenting style. But evidently, there are an awful lot of Americans who do use yelling as a parenting style. My theory is when you abandon discipline, what you're left with is parenting by frustration. And that's exactly what boils over in yelling. The phone number to join the discussion is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Hastings, Nebraska. Sharon's on the line. Go ahead, Sharon.
Yes, Albert. Say, I did not use spanking out of anger in raising my young, very strong-willed daughter. I didn't find it a very dignified thing to do after age 5 for certain. Before age 5, she might get a single swat to get her attention. But that was the extent of any spanking. But the idea of yelling at a kid, what exactly are we yelling at them is one question. And then, you know, if the parent would just get off the couch and go take action rather than yell, get a whole lot more compliance from their kids and a lot more learning. I've seen lots of parents just sit on the couch and yell at the kid, I told you to stop that, get down from there, and the kid doesn't listen any better than if you spank them. They're going to find that their yelling is treated the same way in about 20 years as the spanking is today.
You know, I appreciate your call, Sharon, and I appreciate especially the fact that you isolate anger as the crucial issue here. And I think there's great legitimacy to that. And as a parent, as a sinner, I have to tell you that there are times when I know I've responded in anger when I wish I had not. I know that anger can be so close. Maybe in some folks, it's more there for dad than for mom. I am reminded that someone wrote years ago that he thought of his father as thunder, because whenever he entered the room, there was rumbling and noise. Angry noise, frustrating noise. And boy, I tell you, that's a convicting thing for a dad to hear. We better not be thunder. We better every once in a while be ready to be thunder in the right sense, but not in the wrong sense. Not in anger, not in frustration. There's nothing wrong with yelling at your child to get back out of the road when they're about to step into traffic, but there's everything wrong with unloading your frustrations on your child in anger. And even more fundamentally, it's just wrong to use it as a parenting style, much less to delude ourselves into thinking that it's a form of discipline. It's not a form of discipline. I have before me a newspaper article indicating that human rights activists are demanding, you're going to love this headline, that the United States military stop using loud music as a form of intimidation and culture. Here it is. It says, musicians demand an end to music torture on Guantanamo detainees. Now, I don't have time to unpack that story, but I can tell you that noise can become a real problem in a person's life. It can become perhaps a form of distraction and pain. And when parents shift to making noise and yelling and screaming out of anger rather than disciplining out of love, I think we have a huge problem. Thanks for your call, Sharon. Let's go to Sean, calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Sean.
Hi, Dr. Moeller. I just want to tell you that my wife and I have been facilitating a ministry called Growing Kids God's Way, and one of the key pieces to that ministry is that we're really taught to parent for the child's holiness, not necessarily the child's happiness. So while spanking is an option, it's primarily the last option. We really try to drive, and the ministry is about getting to the moral heart of the child.
Well, when you start talking about the moral heart of the child and holiness, well, you're right there in the middle of the theological territory that evangelical Christians ought to understand as the very framework and context, not only for thinking about parenting, but thinking about every aspect of Christian faithfulness. I appreciate your call, Sean. We are called to parent for the child's holiness. Ultimately, our task is to discipline them, not only so that they will hear our voice and obey it. That is mandatory, that is necessary, and that's altogether too lacking with many parents with their children today. But ultimately, the Christian parents should discipline the child in order that the child would hear God's voice. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Back with your calls on the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. Fascinating discussion. The article really captures your attention because I think virtually every parent, the parents who are nailed by this article and the parents who are not, the parents who are guilty of substituting yelling for discipline, and those who are not, know that it is so prevalent. All you have to do is go out in public. All you have to do is watch what goes on between parents and children. You know, you don't have to be all that alert to see exactly what's going on here. Well, Hillary Stout's onto something with her article, "For Some Parents, Shouting is the New Spanking." I wonder what you think about it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Very, very interesting. One young man wrote in to say, "I can't call in, but if my parents didn't spank and only yelled at me, I think I would have turned into a murderer instead of a pastor." I don't know. Well, let's hope not. But I can tell you, the anger is transferred. That's one of the bigger issues. And, you know, this is a very easy to understand principle. Without discipline, you just transfer anger. You just transfer anger from the one person to the other. If frustration is the order and rhythm of the family's life, then you just transfer the anger and the frustration from one person to the other. I can remember my boyhood pastor down in Pompano Beach, Florida, coming and giving the illustration. He said, "This is the way it works in the home." And the reason I remember this is because even hearing it as a teenager, I knew it was true. I could see it. I had all kinds of friends and neighbors around me, and I could see this operate in their homes. The dad comes home mad from work. He yells at mom. Mom yells at the kid. The kid yells at his little sister. The little sister yells at the little brother. And the little brother kicks the dog. The dog bites the dad and starts the cycle all over again. And that's exactly the way it is in many homes. And it's just a transfer of frustration. That's not what discipline is. Discipline is not the parent becoming frustrated by the child so that the parent then says, "Okay, you give me the frustration. I'm now going to lay it back on you. I'm going to deliver that anger and frustration back on you. And so I'm going to yell at you." No, discipline is when the parent says, "Look, I'm the grown-up here, and I've been given a God-assigned responsibility, and my responsibility is to say it stops here, and it doesn't stop here because I'm angry. It stops here because I'm dad or I'm mom, and there are consequences to what you just did, and this is what it's going to look like, and very calmly, there's going to be discipline. If you do not do that..." And it's not just spanking we're talking about here, but discipline with clear consequences. I do believe in spanking, but spanking's not the right response in every situation. But there is, out of the parent's toolbox, an appropriate set of disciplinary tools to say, "All right, this is what's going to happen. You're not going to have that toy to play with." And I don't mean for hours, but for days. You're not going to have the opportunity to disobey me in that way, because I'm not going to give you the freedom to even get close to that disobedience. There are all kinds of things going on here, but in the main, the Bible gives us wisdom. I firmly believe in that wisdom, that especially when dealing with children, as we're teaching them right from wrong, the consequences are best delivered with some some swats that hurt but do not harm. And we'll get the attention of the child in such a way that they are not only alerted, but they are corrected. From Peoria, Illinois, Jennifer's calling. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Hi, I'm a teacher, and I always try to think of treating my students even the same that I would treat my own children at home, with the same love and respect. I think that one of the keys as a teacher we try to remember is having a calm and quiet voice. And if things get really tense, the calmer you get and the firmer you are, that doesn't mean you're not firm, but the calmer you get, the quieter the child is and the more they'll listen to you.
Okay, Jennifer, I got to tell you, you got credibility in my view to speak to this because, first of all, you're a teacher, but more importantly, I hear little ones in the car with you or wherever you are right now.
Yes.
And that just speaks to me credibility. So tell me, am I right that that frustration's what's left when discipline is abandoned?
Yes. I think that even taking the ability for authorities to give spankings in schools, for example, and this is my personal opinion, is harder on a school. And when parents aren't having that follow through at home, I feel like there just isn't a group effort to discipline the students, and not punish, but discipline properly with proper consequences.
Jennifer, thank you so much for your call. God bless you and your precious kids. I hear they're with you and your family. And I wholeheartedly agree with your point there. And, you know, Hillary Clinton wrote that book that included much with which I do not agree. It takes a village to raise a child. It doesn't take a village in that sense to raise a child, but it does take a healthy village in order for it to be a healthy place for children. And that means it ought to be a place where the morality and the discipline that is inculcated in the child at home, where the responsibility is non-negotiable, non-franchisable, direct, given by God, it ought to be replicated throughout the society and yes, in the schools. And, you know, Jennifer, when I was going to school in the public schools, there was a paddle in the classroom, and it was used. And then at certain advanced ages, you got sent somewhere else where you met with someone who knew how to use it. And by the way, back in that old day, prehistoric, what happened was that when you went home, your parents had found out about this, and there were consequences at home. My father said when I was getting ready to go to the first grade, my father said to me, "You ever spanked at school? It's going to be payday someday when you get home." Nowadays, and I think Jennifer's probably all too familiar with this, nowadays, when the child is punished almost in every school district now by something short of a paddling, which means, especially with the case of a whole lot of boys I went to school with, that means short of getting their attention, what you have is a parent who's ready to come in and hire an attorney to sue the school for actually taking any disciplinary action against the child. We have a moral revolution here. And it's led to a noise increase. I appreciate the New York Times for running this article. I think it's a barometer of where we are. I think Hillary Stout's onto something, and I think it's about more than parenting. But parenting is at the center of this. I appreciate so much the callers today and also those who wrote in and have sent us messages. I've been rather overwhelmed by the fact that almost everyone who takes a look at this understands that we're not just talking about single children and isolated families. We're talking about a phenomenon that marks what we expect to see at the Little League game, what we expect to see at the shopping mall, what we expect to hear in our neighbor's house. I wonder, have we reached the point where we expect to hear that at church as well and with other Christian parents? This is a great topic for Christian parents to get together to talk about. The next time you're together, you're watching your kids get ready for the soccer game, you're getting ready to do something, go run an errand, talk about this. I think the responses will be very revealing. We'll be right back with final thoughts on the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. This article causes me to smile in so many different places because it's like you know these people, you see these people. Maybe some of you listening know you are these people. Amy Wilson, a writer and actress in Manhattan, according to Hillary Stout's report, For Some Parents, Shouting is the New Spanking, published in the New York Times. Amy Wilson, it is said here, used to give up shopping for Lent. That was before she had children, now ages 6, 5, and 2. This year, she gave up yelling. Or tried to. It really didn't work, she said. But I definitely yelled less. You know, it seems to me, in all honesty and candor, that the answer to this is not yelling less, yelling more softly, but asking fundamentally if yelling has become a symptom of a greater failure in parenting. You know, the premise of this article at the New York Times is that a generation that's giving up on spanking is going to have to find something, and unfortunately what they have found by reflex is yelling, and now they don't know what to do with they can't spank and they can't yell. It is interesting that the professor Ronald P. Rahner, who is director of the Center for the Study of Interpersonal Acceptance and Rejection at the University of Connecticut, how's that for a think tank? He said that while spanking is considered taboo by the major medical and psychological associations, by the way, that's not universally true, even if it were, that wouldn't make it right or wrong. Nonetheless, I understand that's the New York Times, that's what they say. There are still some religious and conservative groups who support it as an effective disciplinary tool, believing that the Bible explicitly allows it. Okay, let me just point out, we don't merely believe that the Bible explicitly allows it. Anyone who can read knows that the Bible explicitly allows it. But it's just another reminder of the fact that what's being subverted here is not so much just spanking, it's discipline. And what I'm calling for and urging upon you is to consider the parent's non-negotiable role, a role that only the parent can fulfill as the disciplinarian. You know, the Bible's very clear that the parent who loves the child disciplines the child. The parent, by inference, that does not discipline the child is failing in a crucial test of showing that child love. We need to show our children unconditional acceptance because they are God's gifts to us. They are the stewardship given to us as parents. They are indeed the objects of our love and affection and devotion. But even as we have unconditional acceptance for the child, we can never offer, must never offer, unconditional acceptance, that is, for their behavior, for their attitudes, for their words, for their actions. That's where we have to teach what every adult had better learn, and that is that actions have consequences. And those consequences aren't just hypothetical, and they aren't just measured by the volume of a voice. The biggest issue is we want our children to avoid disobedience when the voice is not ours, but God's. Back next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.